morning. It's time for the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. It's Monday, July 8th, 2019. We have 16 vessels on today's Columbia River ship schedule. In our marine weather forecast, look for north winds to 5 knots veering around to the south in the morning and then veering around to the west, 5 knots in the afternoon. So you can see a weather system moving through, and we do have a change in our weather that's bringing us some rain. And so a low-pressure system must be kind of spinning over our area. And if you visualize that, you can understand how the wind could change direction depending on what part of that spinning weather system is over where you are. Wind waves from the northwest, 1 foot at 4 seconds apart, shifting to the south at 4 seconds in the morning, then shifting to the west at 4 seconds in the afternoon. So you see the wind waves moving, direction of those wind waves moving around as the wind goes. But we do have those southwest swells pretty steady at 2 feet at 15 seconds. That's because the source of those swells is way, way out in the ocean, sometimes as far away as Japan, coming all the way across the ocean. On the Columbia River Bar this morning, we have seas 2 to 3 feet through tomorrow, and max ebb current times around 10 a.m., around 11 p.m., and again, tomorrow morning looks like about 11 a.m. So at any rate, we have these things, these periods of very, very strong current in outgoing current in the river. You can look this marine weather forecast up for the Columbia River Bar on just about any weather website. And it lets you know when that heavy turbulence caused by the outgoing current and the falling tide create really difficult conditions in the river, and that is why it's part of the marine weather forecast. And today we're going to be talking about the power of water, something that I tend to talk about quite a bit here. About the how really overwhelming even a small amount of water can be if it's moving quickly and you're in its way. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. But first, let's take a look at our Columbia River ship schedule. 5 inbounders, 5 in our Astoria anchorages, 6 outbounders heading downriver and out to sea. Our first arrival in the river is the tug C-SPAN Rogue. She's arriving from Vancouver, British Columbia. She's headed for the port of Astoria, probably to clear customs. And then if This pattern that I've seen many times over the years is the case, she will probably go to the waters off of the near Tongue Point and pick up a barge that may be waiting for her. So she came in to probably about 2 a.m. there. So sometime today she might be picking up that barge off of if you see a barge anchored out there off of Tongue Point in the Tongue Point area off the waterfront, that's what's happening. On the other hand, she could be coming in and getting fuel and things like that or doing something different. But these C-SPAN tugs, when they come in from Canada, are generally coming in to pick up a barge from my experience with this. The Kiso is arriving from Sacramento, California. She's going to port westward to handle a cargo of ethanol. She probably passed Astoria around 2:30 a.m. We have her stopping in the Astoria anchorage for a bit. So she will be there until about 10 a.m. when she will head up to port westward. It'll take her about 2 hours to get there, so maybe you'll see her there about noon if you can see that from where you are. The Auckland Spirit is arriving from China. She's headed for the Astoria anchorage, getting there early this morning, probably out there already, a wheat ship. The Simona Progress is arriving from China, also headed for the Astoria anchorage. Not sure what her cargo is, but I'll take a guess that it's wheat. The Maritime Jing'an is arriving from the Netherlands, headed for a berth in Portland, and she will pass Astoria maybe around 4:30 p.m. Probably means she came through the Panama Canal if she's arriving from the Netherlands. In the Astoria anchorage, we have the Kenia. She's headed for Kalama to pick up corn, soy, or wheat today at about looks like she might have gone up there yesterday. So if so, she's now picking up corn, soy, or wheat in Kalama. And the Pan Star is waiting orders. She's a corn, soy, or wheat ship when she gets up to Kalama eventually. The Sakazaya Noble is a wheat ship awaiting orders. And the research vessel Falkor is at the port of Astoria, probably changing crews, picking up supplies, perhaps getting a relief captain or new scientists on board, or any combination thereof. That's generally why research vessels come into port. And our outbounders, the Tiger Pioneer is leaving the port of Vancouver with wheat on board at about 12:30, so that would put her past Astoria outbound around 6:30. The Hako is leaving Portland with potash on board at about 3 p.m., maybe 9 p.m. past Astoria. The Chesapeake Highway, when you see the word highway in the name of a ship, generally a car carrier, and that's the case with this one. She's leaving Portland with Toyotas on board around 3 p.m., so maybe 9 p.m. past Astoria. The Amalfi is leaving Kalama with with wheat on board at about 5 p.m., maybe 10 p.m. past Astoria. The Pan Bicorn is leaving. She's a ship that was in the Astoria anchors last week, is now leaving Longview with wheat on board. And the African Alki is leaving the port of Portland with soda ash on board around 7 p.m., so maybe around 1 a.m. in the morning tomorrow. We'll see her past Astoria. Well, I want to read a little bit to you from an article that just grabbed me in terms of the incredible information that was in just the first few opening paragraphs of it. If you want to read it, look online for New Yorker magazine. Catherine Schultz is the author. And she's written a couple of articles now about tsunami danger in the Pacific Northwest. And this second article is all about the article overall is about this law that was recently enacted in Oregon allowing people to build in tsunami zones, which is quite controversial. But the part that I want to share with you this morning is the power of water that is explained so well in the beginning of this article. So I want to share that with you, and I want you to keep it in mind when you go to the beach, because this is really what you're looking at when you get here and these other risks that we face when we live here in this maritime environment. So let me just read you the first couple paragraphs of this article. Other than asteroid strikes and atomic bombs, there is no more destructive force on this planet than water. 6 inches of it, flowing at a mere 7 miles per hour, will knock a grown man off his feet. 2 feet of it will sweep away most cars. 2 cubic yards of it weigh well over a ton. If that much of it hits you at, say, 20 miles per hour, it will do as much damage to your body as a Subaru. In tough seas, a regular ocean wave can break with a force of 2,000 pounds per square foot, more than enough to snap a human neck. A rogue wave, one that is more than twice the height of those around it, can sink a 900-foot ship. Keep scaling up the water, and you keep scaling up the trouble. 8 years ago, a tsunami struck the northeast coast of Japan. A tsunami is not like a regular wave, and it is not like a rogue wave. It is more like a rogue ocean. It forms most often when an earthquake shifts the seabed and displaces all of the water above it. This displaced water does not crest and fall. It simply rises like an extremely high tide until the entire water column is in motion from seafloor to surface. Then it rolls inland with 10 or 20 or 60 miles of similar waves at its back and demolishes everything in its path. So if you look at the videos, which I did recently, of the tsunami waves that struck Japan, you know, when you see movies about tsunamis, it's always a giant towering wave that crashes over everything. And this was not the case. It was an inexorable, slowly rising tide that just came way inland. And you could watch the buildings crumbling, the vehicles floating away, and everything just sort of being slowly and meticulously ripped apart by the water. So I just want to remind you that when you're at the beach, this is the power of water. Even in the river, you know, these really rough currents that we have, cars get lost in the surf all the time. People get stranded by rising water. You can't just wade through it. We have rip currents here, so the water is very cold. So just keep that in mind when you're out beachcombing, that this is not, you know, a lake. And the risks are real, and the power of the water is something that we should be thinking about whenever we get anywhere near it. It's beautiful to look at. It's beautiful to be near, and we can certainly enjoy it. But just be careful out there when you're walking on the beach. There are lots and lots of stories of rescues and rescues that didn't work out of people who underestimated the power of water. You've been listening to The Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.